Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook. Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I am your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sunday of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. So you just have to make your time conversions across the United States, across North America, and in fact, across the world. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who's caring for a brain injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. I always say, brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere, and unfortunately, it does. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But, you know, most folks don't even know about brain injury, and I know that I never did. 17 years ago, it was completely foreign to me. I didn't know about it until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks understand what survivors and caregivers experience. And on the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, as is today, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neural fatigue, anger, or various other symptoms of brain injury. And tonight's show is called What Do You Missed Most About Yourself? Think about that. What do you miss most about yourself? So for me, just a little snippet here. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005, like I said, 17 years ago. It's more than that now, when my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about me on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. It's all one word, all lowercase. And this is the part of the show I always remember to say, please have a pencil and some paper next to you so you can jot down URLs that you might want to look up some information on after the show, not now. But anyhow, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show starting in August of 2014, the last of which in November of 2014, actually featured a discussion with David himself. So I also interviewed David on my April 19, 2020 show for his perspective on his brain injury after, at that time, it was 15 years. And also, because if you all remember, that's when the onset of COVID-19 was happening. And because David is a retired professor of microbiology, I wanted his understanding, his scientific understanding of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I wanted to share that information with my listeners. So you can find my archived shows on my blog at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just click on the air show menu. It's a tab under the category section on the right sidebar. So that's really, really easy. Or you can type David Fugerski if you're just looking for something on David in the search box on the right sidebar to learn more about him. And he's posted, we posted a lot of COVID informational scientific things where David will take an article by scientists and if you've ever tried to read it, it's a foreign language, but he will break it down and make it, you know, put it in layman's terms so that we, or laywoman's terms, so that we can understand it as well. So that's one of the things you can do on surviving traumatic brain injury too. You can also read our complete story in my book called Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. It was published by Right Life Publishing and released in November of 2018. And you can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as an ebook and a print book and as an audiobook. Most recently, I've read that and had that published too with Right Life. So all of those can be found at any of your local book hubs, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the brick and mortar stores, your book indie bookstores, wherever, and your libraries. And if they don't happen to have it, just ask them for it. They can order it. So go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com, to learn more about me. And in fact, if you go there, just a little hint, look for the cast of characters. So if you're reading the book, you can follow along and see who the people are that actually were involved in David's recovery from his brain injury. It's kind of fun to see the real people, you know, when you're reading a book. So I hope that you're going to find my show tonight fun and informative. And I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. Pacific time. And you can also tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time on the weekends to listen to your favorite shows, too. And Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States and in 36 countries. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And as I mentioned a few minutes earlier, our show is entitled, What Do You Miss About Yourself After Brain Injury? You know, so, yeah, I think it's a very interesting topic. I've not addressed it before, so I thought that would be something that I brought a panel together, and we're going to talk about it today. But did you know that when someone suffers a brain injury, that their life changes dramatically? You're not alone. Most folks don't realize that. And as I mentioned in my intro, I didn't even realize that. Boy, do I know it now. But I didn't have a clue what brain injury was, what it entailed, how it was going to affect my husband's life or my life ever before he had one in January 13 of 2005. So people just don't know about brain injury until it happens to them or to someone they love. And then it's a scramble to learn as much as you can in a very short time. And if you're listening to the show, you'll be ahead of the game because you'll be hearing some of the things that people have to go through who are talking straight from the heart because they have had a brain injury or they are a caregiver, as I am, for a brain-injured person, or I should say a person with brain injury. Brain injury does not define the person. The person happens to have brain injury. The damage inflicted by a brain injury will be determined by the location of the injury in the brain and the severity of its impact. For example, if the cerebellum is damaged, the survivor's balance can be severely altered, as is the case for my husband David. David's swallow, his speech, and the ataxia in his right arm are all functions of his cerebellum that were affected. Each of these afflictions and more have drastically changed David's life. David, what he misses most about his pre-brain injury life, and his resounding answer was his smile. Wow, that shocked me. I wasn't expecting that. He said his smile, because it changes his personality. It alters his personality. People don't see who he really is because David has ataxia. He has a paralysis in his right side of his face. So the muscles there aren't working. So when he tries to smile, it's a lopsided smile. And it just doesn't look right and people don't quite get that he is smiling. And he doesn't even quite get that he's smiling. So I was really shocked when I asked him that. And another thing that I thought he would answer would be that would be his independence, which was stripped from him since he is no longer able to walk easily. A fall is only a misstep away because of his balance challenge. And I think independence, a result of brain injury for many survivors, is a top contender for the answer of what do you miss most about yourself. So
sorry,
let me introduce you. Okay, that's Megan. Okay, I'm gonna mute you guys for just a minute. Okay. Let's see. Where am I? Oh, the fall. Yeah, that's like a misstep. I mean, when David is walking across the room, it just takes one little in his step that could make him topple down and lose his balance. So I think a lot of people feel, you know, have anyone who has an independence thing that they cannot get out because of their brain injury, I think that would be a big problem, what they might miss. So let me introduce you to my panel this evening, and we'll hear their views on what they miss most about their lives after their brain injuries. So first I'm going to talk about Megan Beaudry, who developed lupus in 2009, lupus caused a brain inflammation in her brain. And she has become a patient advocate for lupus. And you can learn more about lupus at lupus.net. That's simple enough. Remember that pencil, and if you're interested in that, jot it down and check it out later. Megan began writing as part of her rehabilitation from a brain trauma in 2014, and she simply never stopped. Her work has been published in Hippocampus, Ravishly, Folks at PillPack, Al Jazeera, and the Huffington Post. When Megan's not writing, she can be found cuddling with her rescue dogs, which we just heard a few moments ago, one of them, drinking bubble tea and teaching students ages 3 to 93 how to play the violin. And I'd love to see that 93-year-old playing. I think that would be just marvelous. And a 3-year-old, too. I mean, pretty phenomenal. You can read about Megan on my blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. In the search box, type her name, Megan Beaudry. It's M-E-G-H-A-N Beaudry, B-E-A-U-D-R-Y. A Survivor Speak Out interview will pop up, and so will a show from Another Fork in the Road from March 21, 2021, on which Megan appeared. So you can follow Megan on Twitter at MeganBeaudry1. .com. And so on that note, I want to welcome Megan. Hi, Megan, and welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. Next, I'm going to talk about Gail Waitkin. Gail is a panelist, and she is a survivor of multiple brain injuries, 12 to be exact. Most of Gail's injuries are sports-related, and they happened throughout her life. But her most challenging brain injury happened in 2015 when she was involved in a car accident and suffered a whiplash. It's hard to believe that a whiplash can cause a brain injury, but it definitely can, and it definitely does. And I actually know many survivors that entered the brain injury community with that same injury. So in Gail's own words, she is, quote, an artist, educator, life strategist, and a TBI expert. It's too bad she has to be a TBI expert because when you become a TBI expert, you know too much about it, and the reason why you know too much about it is it most likely has happened to you. But Gail Waitkin is also the author of Heal Your TBI and Heal Their TBI. These books can be downloaded free on Gail's website, HealYourTBI.com. So make sure you jot that one down. You've got some free books coming there if you want to read about Gail's experiences. You can also learn more about Gail on my blog, again, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. Find the search button on the right side and type her name. You read her interview on Survivors Speak Out. And I'm pleased to have Gail join my panel this evening. So let me just open her mic and welcome her. Hi, Gail. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm well. Hi, everyone.
Good. All right. And Barbara Wilson, my last finalist. Oh, you guys are finalists. You're all finalists in my thing. Panelists in my book. You're all finalists. You're all winners. So when Barbara Wilson was an agent for the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, in the BSA division, the Banking Secrecy Act, she dealt with money laundering, terrorist activity, and human trafficking. Wow. I mean, those all are just the makings of a thriller, a thriller novel is what it sounds like to me. But sadly, Barbara was also exposed to poison chemicals in the form of pesticides while on her job site. After several days of exposure, Barbara realized the gravity of her problem. Shortness of breath and cognitive issues sent her to the emergency room. Since her injury, Barbara works tirelessly to overcome the difficulties of her brain injury. As a co-founder of Helping Hands Club, Barbara helps families have giving meals. The Helping Hands Club has partnered up with a shelter that deals with domestic violence, and they are a non-profit organization. You can learn more about Barbara Wilson at, you can guessed it, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Press that search button in the right sidebar, type Barbara's name, and look in Survivors Speak Out. Her show about anoxic brain injury is under the category on the air show menu. Scroll to May 7, 2017. Barbara has a fascinating story, and I'm pleased to have her join my panel today. Now, each of these panelists has been on many other panels, so if you're interested in hearing more about them, again, just go to the, whatever that is, the Survivors or Speak Out and look, or put their name in, but Survivors Speak Out and look down to see what kind of shows they have been on. Very fascinating. So, on that note, I just want to say, as a caregiver, again, the name of the show is What Do You Miss Most About Yourself? And I'm going to start this today because I'm the only caregiver on the show. But I want you to know that caregivers also miss. So as a caregiver, my life has changed too since David's brain injury. I think I've become stronger, a more in-control, take-charge sort of gal. Of course, I always displayed those characteristics in my first grade classroom, managing the lives of about 25 to 27 6 and 7-year-olds every day. But at home, David ran the ship. You know, he took care of all the bills and the financials. He steered our big purchases like buying a car or a house. Of course, I was involved in them, but I wasn't the main character in that story. And David did the taxes and took out the trash, all the things I never wanted to do. But after his brain injury, those jobs became mine. So what do I miss most since David's brain injury? I miss the me that didn't have to tote all those extra responsibilities, especially now that tax season looms again. That's on my mind constantly. I've got to get the tax report done so I can give it off to the, I mean, I'm not even doing it, but I still have to get it all prepared to send to the accountant. And that's stressful enough and overwhelming enough. But even with that, mostly I miss the David who I married. I miss the man who always took care of me, the man I could be carefree and spontaneous with. Yes, caregivers have regrets too, and we miss things about our old lives too. A caregiver's change after someone they love has a brain injury, and it's unavoidable. It can't be helped. Brain injury affects not only the survivor, but also his or her family and friends. And I think that's one of the things that most people don't get. And it's brought to mind so often when people say to me after they haven't seen me in a long time, and their first thing is, how's David doing? It's like, whoa, okay. Well, and I always think that's nice. I'm really glad that they're asking about him. And, of course, I answer and tell them and everything. But they never really think about saying, well, how are you doing? I'm not talking about the typical, hi, how are you kind of thing. I'm talking about the, hi, how are you doing? Because even after 17 years of life, your caregivers, they and your friends and your family who are supporting survivors really need support too, you know, frankly. And so just that question of how are you doing really is a boost. So just think about the next time you're asking about a survivor. It's a good thing to do, definitely ask about the survivor, but also throw in the question about the caregiver too. It really helps. So Barbara, we're going to start with you tonight, and I want to jump right into our question. What do you miss most about yourself since your brain injury, and why? Hello, Barbara, are you there? Whoops. Barbara, are you there?
Do you hear me? Do you hear me?
Okay, I can now. Yeah, I think I had the wrong mic open. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do you hear me?
Did you hear my question?
Do you hear me?
I do.
Yes.
I can.
Yes. Hi, Donna.
Okay.
This is Barbara.
Hi.
The one thing that I really miss about myself was my career that ended with my brain injury. I miss the whole thing about having purpose and my identity, because, of course, I went to college to get my degree to be an accountant and to have a career with the IRS, to become the IRS, become the agent, and to also, I went into a special program to do the anti-money laundering and the fraud and the terrorist activity. I really miss having identity. I don't feel mm-hmm. that I have an identity anymore, and I long for that. It's hard to, when I wake up in the morning or in the afternoon now, to have that structure. I miss that structure.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. That I didn't think about that when I was preparing the show, but identity is really a huge factor in how survivors feel after their injury. Because, like you said, you had a career that you really enjoyed, that you prided yourself on, and it was stripped away from you because of a brain injury. You were no longer able to do that career. And, you know, and yes, the irony of it is your career is what caused your brain injury. That's even, you know, worse. But I really meant it when sounded like it was – Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, because I had so much opportunity to grow and to learn, and that was my goal, was to learn and grow, because we had continuous education, and I really wanted to grow and become management material within the IRS, and I, of course, don't have that anymore. They retired me. I was only with the IRS for 5 years. And to go out on retirement, you know, after 5 years, that was very short-lived of a career. So it hurts. It hurts. My therapist and I talk about it all the time. I still haven't gone through 100% of the grieving process. So it still hurts. It hurts.
How old were you when you had to retire?
I was 41.
Wow, yeah, that is so young to be able to.
I was young. I was young.
Yeah, I get it. I retired from my teaching classroom when I was much older, and it was still such a huge decision because I knew that once I retired, I was closing a door on something that I really related to, I identified with, and it was hard. It was a very hard decision. that I had to make to,
you're
to,
lost.
To you know, to close that door. Yeah. But I made the decision
lost.
On my own. You didn't get to make that decision on your own. And you were much, much younger, so you didn't even get to enjoy the career that you chose. You know, it's funny because people think, oh, I've got to get up and go to work, and everybody thinks, oh, what a drudge. You know, but for working for some people is like their life glory, you know. It's like, I enjoyed my job. I mean, that's why I chose it.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't get to choose their jobs, but I enjoyed it. And so I didn't mind. Well, I minded getting up. I'm not going to lie. I hated getting up at 5:30 in the morning to go to go to school. But once I was in school, I was in heaven. So so that I can understand that. Let me just pop over here to Gail, and let's continue in the same thread, Gail. What do you miss most about yourself since your brain injury, and why?
Well, there's a few things, I guess. Number one is I missed the athleticism that I enjoyed prior to my injury, and I've been working hard on getting that back. In particular, I used to do things with my kids and friends yearly. We had traditions, but I did get back on my bike recently, and that was really a wonderful and exhilarating experience. So over time, I plan on being able to rebuild. The other thing that I miss a lot is my abilities, my cognitive abilities. So my executive functioning skills are a little skewed. And in particular, it's the way I learn. So for instance, now I'm taking a course and it's pretty much stand and deliver, you know, over Zoom. And my brain just blows up listening to the, I just tune out. And so I have little strategies that I employ to keep myself on track. I use sticky notes and the wall, and I have to have a little back and forth with myself between my my hands and writing down, note-taking quickly, and then reading things and reviewing them later on. But being in the moment, as we are now, too, is, you know, so ordering for me to stack information in order to tell a story, the beginning, the middle, and the end, is something that I've been working on.
Huh, very interesting. You know, it's interesting that you said you miss your athletic abilities, because that's where most of your brain injuries occurred, was through the athletics. And so obviously that was a very important part of your life, to be involved in athletics, being outside, riding your bike. What other sports were you involved in?
Well, you know, when people say athletics, we think of team sports. And interestingly enough, I was never on a team, like a lacrosse team or a girls' soccer team. I wasn't one of those. I wasn't a team player, although I am a team player. But my sports were skiing or horseback riding or biking, you know, so things that you could topple down quite easily. But, you know, I was an active kid, and a lot of my brain injuries occurred in doing activities. So, you know, running, jumping, that type of thing. So,
yeah.
I enjoy all sports and have done really well at most of them in the past. So I miss that.
Yeah, I can imagine that. The other thing you mentioned is your executive brain is affected. And I just wanted to let the audience know, because it took me a while to figure out what executive, you know, functioning was. And it's a matter of organizing things and making decisions, making logical decisions. And we have a friend of ours who also had a brain injury. And it affected, his brain injury affected his executive decision-making. And interestingly enough, they were both professors. David's also a professor, okay? So Ron is a professor at Brigham Young. David, a professor at Columbia. They both had a brain injury. But because Ron's brain injury affected his executive functioning, he was no longer able to work because he wasn't able to make the correct decisions. He also, it's interesting, I think, he also had all his lectures memorized. He never wrote them down. David, on the other hand, is a professor who has it written down and then then presents it, but it's not memorized. But Ron just knew that, and so once he had his brain injury, that was all gone. He was not able to bring any of that back. So that was unfortunate for him. And one of the things I wanted to say is, and this is very confusing to me in a way, but one time he was out in the yard with his grandchildren and got very overly agitated because he thought one of his grandchildren was in the street. He or she wasn't, but that's what he perceived. So it's not a clear thinking thing that's happening when your executive function is not working properly. And I think I think it's very difficult for anybody that has to deal with that in their life after brain injury. It's something we never think about. None of the stuff is anything we ever think about before. You have to think about it when it's affecting you. So can you explain anything further about executive decision making or executive brain injuries, Gail?
Yeah, well, it has to do with, they say there, I guess there's 8 executive functions of our brain, and impulse, there's an impulsivity. So one thing that I noticed about myself early on was I just would speak out, and I still will do this, speak over somebody. And it's difficult for me to control that sometimes. I've learned to take a breath and to sit back, and it's gotten better. But that's one thing. Emotions, you just get flooded with emotions, and learning to control those and to calm those down is a challenge and something that is worth doing. Being able to think, just think flexibly. That's one thing I miss. I used to be very creative in my thinking. I had very fluid thinking and flexible thinking, and that is coming back as I work on it. I realize that my brain is, I'm able to bring things back, but it takes work. And and my memories, memory is compromised. I hate to say it with me because I just don't want to be that. So planning, your planning skills, your ability to prioritize things, to just initiate a task, to organize things, all of those things are executive functioning.
Uh-huh.
And our abilities to make decisions, I think everyone can imagine how difficult it is to make a decision if you're unable to keep the point that you're trying to decide about in the forefront of your mind and compare all these other facts, if you will, or things, relevant points that you need to have at hand. And at one time, this was so easy. And, to be a lawyer with a brain injury would be near impossible to make, to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that even more. Yeah. Sorry. We'll give you a break now.
No, that's fine. No, it's good practice. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. So, Megan, there's no surprise here because the same question is coming at you. So what do you miss most about yourself since your brain injury and why?
It's interesting that the things that I miss now are not necessarily the things that I missed most in the beginning. I think, when I first became sick with lupus and when I first got brain inflammation, what was really terrible for me is not being able to play my viola whenever I wanted to, not being able to, understand what my fingers were doing. And often I was very exhausted and I just couldn't even play through one scale. And that was terrible to me. That felt like the end of the world. I think since then, I've kind of learned to manage my energy a little bit and learn to pace myself. And so I'm able to practice more. And I think the other thing is I really stopped completely identifying as only a musician. And I found other things about myself that, you know, I could have as part of my identity. I think the things that I miss now, like 12 years in, the biggest thing is my memory. I don't have a very good short-term memory, and then sometimes things in my long-term memory don't always stay there. So, you know, frequently I'll repeat myself because I forgot that I said it before. Or, you know, I'll be teaching a lesson and I'll just completely forget when my student comes in what piece they're working on. So I'm like, oh, dear, what are you playing today? So that's tough. And I think the other thing is just being on top of things. I was always the friend who kind of organized group outings or, like, chose the movie that we were going to and called everybody. Or, you know, the person in the group who kind of, like, oh, you know, let's figure out who's doing what part of the group project. And I'm just not really that person anymore. I don't have the organizational skills anymore. So that's been kind of tough. But at the same time, it's a little bit of a relief to let go of it. And occasionally have somebody else do that part too.
Yeah, I get that. You know, when you mentioned not only identifying yourself as a musician, that brought to mind something for me too. Because for me, as I grew up through my life, I identified myself as a teacher. I actually still do, but I have opened up since I have retired, and I didn't retire because of David's brain injury. I just retired because it got to be that time. But it was a hard decision to make, not being able to, you know, to be a teacher anymore, because that was my life. That's who I was. But now I see what you're saying, because now I identify myself as a jewelry crafter, which I haven't been doing much of anything like right now, but I also identify myself as a stage manager in the theater. And the point of that being is that we're not single people. We have other things that make us up. We're not just one entity. I'm not just a teacher, but, you know, in fact, on my profile on Facebook or in a lot of places, I go and I say, you know, when they ask who you are, I go, mother, wife, daughter, aunt, you know, go on and everything, spouse, you know, and just list all the things, photographer, jewelry crafter, teacher. I mean, and I list about 20 things that I am. And so I think people need to think about that. Think of what you are and not what you're not. Think about the things that you can do. And a lot of us just don't do it because we're so focused on one area of our life. And so sometimes having a brain injury opens that line of thinking up to people. And I think it's important for them to realize that you aren't a brain injury. You are a person with a brain injury that can do many things, even though you may not be able to do what you did before. Even though you may not be able to do the job that you loved, like Barbara, or Gail can't do all the sports that she was so, you know, not sports, but athletics that she was involved in. And Megan, for you, you know, there are more things that you can do. You're not the organizer of all your friends anymore. Sometimes, like you said, that's not a bad thing, you know, because you just need to take a break. So that's really interesting. I like that. I think for David, he did get to go back to work after his brain injury, and that was good. It was good. And David identified as a scientist. And scientists, as I say often, never retire. They just go on into their 80s and into their 90s, and they're still holding an office in some university. And that's just a known fact in the scientific community. They just don't retire. So I never expected David to really retire. Even with the brain injury, he didn't retire until 7 years after his brain injury. And when he was going to do that, he got his mind wrapped around it that he could do it. But I also think he worried about the identity part. Like, who am I now? Who am I if I'm not a scientist? Well, number one, he's always a scientist. You can't take that away from him. He's earned that degree, and I'm a teacher, and you can't take that away from me. And each of you, it can't be taken away from you what you are, but you can add more things to who you are. And I think that's really important. And I think with David, he found out, because I think he was worried. I think he was worried after the brain injury. I know he was, actually, that what am I going to do now? And then we retired from the New York City area and moved to the desert. And he was like, what am I going to do now? What do I do with my life? You know? And his life is so darn full, he doesn't know what he can't, you know, where he can find the minutes to fill, to do all the stuff that he's doing. And one of the things is he's an editor for my work. So he's my first editor for all my books I'm writing, for any article I write. And that gives him a huge purpose in life, and he loves doing it. So it's interesting. This is something that he wasn't before, but he is now. And I think that's the point of my talking on this line, is that I think survivors and caregivers need to open yourself up. And if something has been stripped from your life, like the things that you loved before, and you can't do them anymore, look at the other fork in the road, because you're never on the same path for our lives ever. Anybody is never on the same path. We're always making decisions and taking different forks in the road. It's just that happens with a brain injury, you're forced to take one or another path. And other times maybe you're not, but you know, look at the forks. Decide. Maybe there aren't just two forks. Maybe there are a lot of, you know, forks off of those times. But, yeah, so open yourself up and think about what you can do with your life. What will make you happy? And I know with me, once I finished my job, I was able to go into the theater. It's something I wanted to do forever. I started off in college in the theater and then got a job and married and with kids. That went away. That, you know, totally went by the wayside. Well, once I retired, that time was open for me to get back into it. And I think those are the kinds of things we have to think about. You know, what can you do to rebuild yourself, remake yourself? So, yeah. So let's move on to another thought, unless anyone has anything else they want to add to that. Okay. Many survivors feel... actually, I think I just kind of, that note, I think I kind of covered already. So let me just go on to the next thing. Okay. Let's go. Every survivor needs a champion. That's another thing in their corner to help them win their way through one of the most difficult times in their lives. And I was there for David every step of the way and still am. I'm the one who cheers him on. I'm his biggest and most dedicated cheerleader. So Megan, Barbara, and Gail, in that order, can you talk about who has been behind you through your recovery?
I think I'm so blessed to have such wonderful friends. And my best friend in particular lives in Seattle. And, you know, when I was going through brain injury, when it was really, really bad, when I was bedridden with the brain inflammation, you know, I could call her basically any time. You know, I could call her like at 2 uh-huh. in the morning her time, which I tried not uh-huh. to do too much. But also I was having trouble telling time. So sometimes that happened. And, you know, she was always there. And she would always tell me, you know, that she loved me and that I shouldn't worry about these things that I thought I was losing right now. You know, and she told me that I had value as a person to her, even if I couldn't remember things, you know, even if I wasn't the person that I was before. And so I really don't know what I would have done without her. And I think the other person who was just really, you know, someone that I came to really rely on was actually my mother-in-law. And when I was bedridden with brain inflammation the second time, she is the one who moved in with me and took care of me. And, you know, she's just the type of person who can make anybody laugh. And she just has this, you know, wonderful sense of humor. And she's just such a bright, positive person. And, you know, I'd be in bed and I, you know, would be in a terrible mood from the steroids and the brain inflammation. And, you know, she'd come in and she'd have, like, my dog in her purse. And she'd just kind of, like, walk around and he'd be staring out. And it was really hard not to laugh when she was around.
You were very lucky. You're very lucky to have somebody like that, you know, and you always hear the mother-in-law stories, how people don't get along with their mother-in-laws and mothers-in-law. And so it's really a very refreshing to hear that you do. And I have a daughter-in-law who I get along very well with, too, so I can understand that. So, that's cool. You do need somebody there to be your, you know, be your booster. You know, you just need somebody there that can, you know, cheer you up or encourage you along the way. Because it's not something you can do alone. You know, like you said, you were in bed and feeling yucky, obviously, with the steroids and the inflammation. Of course, you're feeling horrible. And so if somebody can make you laugh during that, that's golden. So good for your mother-in-law.
Yeah, and she always did.
Yeah?
Yeah, I call her my other mother.
Oh, that's cool. And then let's see, who else did I say? I gave us an order. Do you remember it? Because I don't remember what I said. Let's see. Well, anybody. Barbara, go next. Let's give Gail a break for a minute. And then we'll go to Gail.
Well, this is Barbara. I had a great support system. I've got great friends, great family. My ex-husband is really there for me. I believe my doctors and my therapist is excellent for me. I've got a doctor in Richmond that I call him my angel. He's very supportive and explains things to me wonderfully, tells me each turn of my every step of the way that we're going, because we didn't explain it, Donna, where the chemicals has now changed into MS. So I've had to face the life now with MS. So things have become a little hairy since September. I fell and broke 3 ribs. So I now go for a brain MRI on Monday, where things just haven't been right since September. So every little step that they talk with me and explain everything, and I have the seizures that go on, and so they explain to me the different type of seizures and everything else. So I get a great support system through the medical field as well, which I'm extremely, extremely lucky, because everyone knows in the brain injury world that sometimes that's just not the greatest. So I feel very blessed.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually going to say that you are very lucky, because so many times brain injuries aren't even diagnosed properly. It's all in the beginning. It takes some people years to get a diagnosis. And I mentioned whiplash earlier in my intro. And, and I know several people who have been in a car accident, had whiplash. One person was sitting at a stoplight. And this has happened to a few people that I know, but sitting at a stoplight, and somebody came in and banged into the car, and she had a whiplash. Well, she drove home. She was fine, apparently. The medics said everything was good, but it wasn't good. There were all kinds of issues and problems going on with her, with light sensitivity, with noise sensitivity, you know, and for 2 years, she had no diagnosis, you know, so that's... And it was her that figured it out by Googling everything and searching down. And then she took the information to the doctor and finally got a diagnosis. And at that point, you start to get some care. But, Barbara, what you said, you're so lucky, because it doesn't happen all the time. I think David also had an amazing neurologist. We really liked our neurologist when we were still in the New Jersey, New York area. Once we moved to the desert, we haven't found a neurologist that we like. And now they won't even take him because they don't think he needs it, because he isn't in the initial phases. And it's like, what? I want him to be seen by somebody. I want him to be his brain injury to be overseen so that, you know, if something is going wrong, we can deal with it. But when I called, and after doing a lot of research and getting some, one of the best in the area, it's like, there's no reason for us to see you, because you don't have, you're not in the initial ravages of brain injury. So I feel kind of lost at this point. So for you to have a doctor who was going to talk with you. And that's what I said about the neurologist we had. He really spent the time. He really explained things to us and talked to us. And it wasn't an in and out rush, you know, and you're gone. He spent whatever time it took to, and sometimes it was an hour, you know. And, of course, they also talked about fishing, which David knows nothing about or cares. But still, you know, it's just the idea that your doctor cared enough to want to sit with you and chat with you. So that was great. So, Gail, let's go on to you.
It took them a year and a half to find my brain injury.
Barbara. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it just, you know, and if someone had found it earlier, would your outcome be different? You know, that's the question you always pose. Would your outcome be different? Would you have gotten the care that you needed to avert some of the problems that you encountered since then? You know, it's something that can't be answered, and you'll never know, but you always wonder. It's kind of a thing you wonder about but have to throw it away because it can drive you nuts. So, yeah. Okay. All right, going back over to Gail now. Gail, what is your thought about this?
Well, as someone who lived alone and was sent home to heal by myself, I can say that the ability to be in concert or in contact and communication with people is so important. And I think that for me, I just had to dig down deep, and I relied upon and I fell back on, my competitive spirit and my love of learning
mm-hmm.
to help myself. And, you know, I can't let it go by without saying, I don't own any stock in the company, but the QEEG and neurofeedback are so important to initiate early on after or even before a brain injury. They should be used to, that test, a QEEG, should be used to establish a baseline for people's brains, young athletes' brains, and also after someone's had a knock on the head or a clock that way, to have it evaluated with the QEEG and have the subsequent neurofeedback sessions is very helpful. But the
mm-hmm.
cue will show where the brain injury is, and it will show that when an MRI and a CAT scan has deemed us to be fine, which is what happened to me,
mm-hmm.
and then it took me 5 years to find out that test was out there in the world. And thank
mm.
goodness for Dr. Paul Henry Wand, who wrote his book, The Concussion Cure, and he became my neurologist and encouraged me to get the QEEG. And I'm ever so grateful that I did do that. The people who helped me were, you know, a 90-year-old woman who I came to know because I was interested in a medical device to help my brain. And she and I became fast
mm-hmm.
friends, and we've been friends ever since. But for those people out there who are wondering, you know, what do I do? What do you do when you're alone? Well, you put a team together. You put people together in your life. Like maybe someone can't spend a lot of time with you, but you can have people that you check in with, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and establish some sort of regular contact. So I had two cousins who would do that with me. And that's what you have to do. You have to force yourself into places that used to be quite comfortable and now perhaps maybe aren't. But we don't grow unless we try. And, you know, I've been working on something for this past week, and in regard to being able to stand up in front of people and speak. And there's a quote that was pointed out to me that I'd like to share with everyone, and it says that
mm-hmm.
it's by L.C. Robinson, and he said that things may happen around you and things may happen to you, but the only things that really count are the things that happen in you. So
good.
When I look at that, I think about how I just pulled myself up and am continuing to do that the best I can, as I know we all are.
Yeah, that's a great quote. I want to have you say it again. I'm starting to write it down. Things happen around you and things happen to you, but the things that happen within you are
things
the ones
may
that
happen
count.
Around you. Things may happen around you and things may happen to you, but the only things that really count are the things that happen in you.
Okay. All right, that, I can look it up too because I wrote his name down. That's a good quote. It's right. You know, and that's the thing. You know, you have control of you, basically. You can make the decisions for you. Somebody else doesn't necessarily have to be the decision maker. And if you don't like what they're saying, then you take control. That's one of the things that, yeah. Well, we're going to do some other quotes here in a few minutes if we get some time, because I had some quotes I wanted to bring up with you guys. So I'm going to move on to the next topic here. And many survivors feel that they are not the same person as they were before their brain injury. Maybe because they are unable to do many of the activities they once easily did. Maybe because their personality changed to a degree that they don't recognize the new person that they have become. It's interesting. I think my husband David does not feel that he has changed since his brain injury. Of course, you know, he realizes that he has many limitations. You know, he knows that. It's obvious. But he doesn't feel that his personality has changed or that his inner self has changed. And I kind of disagree with that. The David that I knew before his injury has faded. And a new version of himself has come to the forefront, which is interesting, you know, to even realize that that can happen to people. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. But the old version of David was, you know, kind of serious, and he only had time for his work and his family. Yet the newer version is much less serious than the old model. When he first came out of the hospital, out of the rehab, he was funnier. He was less serious about, and he was more friendly. You know, and David's always been, he's not unfriendly. I'm not saying that. But he became more friendly, more social. He was, he enjoyed the company of people much more. Maybe because he had more time on his hands at that point. And like I said before, he had only time for work and his family. So socializing wasn't something that we did very much because, when it came to the weekend, he just needed to regroup, you know, recoup. So anyhow, David explains that he didn't have time for all those frivolities in his pre-injury life. And it was hard to get used to the new David. Of course, I liked the old David. I mean, I married the guy, right? So I obviously liked him and I liked the personality that was there. But frankly, now that he's changed and he seems different to me, I like this version of David, too. I like both versions of David. And I wish I could have them both here. But obviously, that's not happening. So, Gail, let's go to Barbara again and then come back. Barbara, do you feel that your response, your personality, has changed significantly after your brain injury? And what do you like most about yourself after your brain injury?
I think I'm a lot calmer now. I don't have that fiery redhead temper that I used to have.
And Barbara has beautiful red hair, I must say.
Aw, thank you, Donna. I tend to relax more. I definitely sleep a lot more. The doctor said I'm on the verge of narcoleptic. So I tend to just, now I can't handle stress as much as I used to. I kind of fall apart when it comes to stress. But I am a lot more relaxed, and I do like it. I must say I do like it. So, yeah, there's things that are definitely more positive than before.
Okay. That's good. I mean, that's those are pluses there that you're talking about too. So that's good. Your personality, you've changed in a way that is good for you. It's more healthy for you, I
definitely
think. All those things that you said.
Definitely.
Yeah. Perfect. Megan, what about you? Do you feel that your personality has changed significantly after your brain injury? And what do you like most about yourself now?
I think it's really two things. One, I definitely care less what people think about me. You know, I think care about that too much before my brain injury.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you just have to reach a point where there's so many other things going on in life. You really can't bother yourself with this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
definitely a
big thing that's changed. Yeah. And
yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, it really puts things in perspective. You really realize, you know, what is important, especially when you face something that, you know, is potentially a life or death situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think,
and
you know, I remember when I was, when I was bedridden, I, you know, was a completely different person. I didn't remember the music that I liked. I didn't remember, you know, whether I liked yogurt or not even. I would see my favorite color and I just wouldn't feel anything. So I was very worried, you know, that I wouldn't come back from that at all. And fortunately, a lot of my personality has come back. I know what my favorite color is. I know that I don't like yogurt. And, you know, I still like the same music that I used to like before. But I think one improvement that I see just to my personality in general is I have a longer view of things. If something goes bad at work or, you know, if I'm working on something that I'm writing, it's just not turning out the way that I want. It's not the end of the world anymore. You realize that, you know, over time, you'll eventually figure things out. And it's okay if it doesn't work right now.
So it sounds like you've gained more perspective.
Yes, that's exactly the word. Yes.
Realizing, that and that's not a bad thing. That's a great thing for people. I think a lot of people need that. That you don't need to take yourself so seriously sometimes. That, you know, if it didn't work this time, well, you try again. It'll work the next time. Or maybe it won't, you know, and let it be. You know, go on and move and do what you need, do the next thing you need to do. But I think that's actually good advice to people to anybody, frankly. It doesn't have to be a survivor or a caregiver. It can be anybody that's living on this planet to put things into perspective. And, I'm trying to see how that affects me. And I'm not coming up with an answer right now, so I'm going to just move on to Gail and ask her the same question. I'll repeat it because it's been a while since. So do you feel, Gail, that your personality has changed significantly after your brain injury? And what do you like most about yourself after your brain injury?
I agree with both of these women. I've experienced everything they've said. I'm much more able to settle into the moment. I think my brain injury taught me that slowing down and just taking in what's going on around me is a really good thing to do. Doing one thing at a time, I am more relaxed and I'm slow to anger now. I don't even know if I can get angry. I look at things in such a different way. So I find myself saying many times throughout the day when I see things, I just think there, but for the grace of God, go I. I mean, I like who I am now. And it's not that I didn't like who I was before, but when I think back at the person I was before my brain injury, I was really racing through life. And I was doing a lot of things. And it was like a frenzy sort of, I don't know. And now it's just much more settled into where I am. And where I am, I like just fine.
And I
have plans, you know.
Uh-huh.
I have plans and I have goals.
Uh-huh.
But I don't feel stressed about them.
That's good. That's healthy. But you just hit me in a place that I just had to stop and think for a second when you said you're not racing through life. I'm thinking of all the things I'm doing, and I'm thinking I am racing through life. I mean, I'm just going from deadline to deadline to deadline, you know, with and it does cause stress. I try to relax and say, okay, it's going to get done. It's going to get done. But even prepping the show took me all the way up to showtime, you know. And it's like the other night I was up from 12 to 5 working on some theater stuff, 12 in the morning to 5 in the morning. Because and that was not a self-imposed deadline. It was a deadline that came because of the theater. But I had to get it done in order so that I didn't let other people down. You know, so, but I, maybe it's because I have so many interests that I'm trying to fulfill. So I'm racing through life and not, you know, slowing down. And I often say to David, I wish I had time to read a book, you know, and it sounds so silly to say that because I should be able to have time to read a book. And I have a couple books started, but usually the books I'm reading for other authors so that I can review their book for them, or I'm reading a book for so that I can interview an author on the show. So it's not choosing books for relaxation, even though I enjoy them in that way. It still has the pressure element over it, being held over it. And so that's kind of weird, but I guess I'm choosing this. I'm not complaining because I am choosing it. But there has to be a time at some point when maybe to give up a couple things, give up, and I say a couple because it's one thing won't help. It has to be several things that I give up, but I don't see it happening in the near future. So I'm probably going to continue to race through life because I don't want to let anything go. I want to get every single minute out of life that I can and do what I can, and I guess that's what's going to be my fate. So until I decide.
But you know what? Sorry, Donna. I'm interrupting you. But
no.
The things that I'm doing now, where I would have been, I just look at what I'm doing in a different way. I don't know how to explain mm-hmm. it. I can do a lot of different things, but the way I look at them when I'm doing them is I'm totally immersed in what I'm doing when I'm doing it. Maybe before what I was doing was thinking about other things while I was doing that thing. But instead, when I'm writing and I have a purpose for what I'm writing, I'm not thinking about other uh-huh. things. Or when I'm off doing an activity, I'm totally in the activity. I'm more in the moment now. So my mind isn't racing. That's what I guess is the secret for me.
Okay, then I feel safer now. I feel better because I was like, oh my God, what am I doing in my life? You know, I have to slow down. But no, I totally agree with you because no matter what I am doing, I am in the moment. Like we're doing this radio show. There is not another thing on my mind but talking to you gals and enjoying this time. You know, when I was walking the dog earlier today, I talked to the dog the whole time. Megan asked me about my dog earlier. I talked to her the whole time. I'm thinking of nothing in this world but this little pup. You know, so I am in the moment. So fortunately, I feel like I'm not as bad off as I think. When I'm working on my jewelry or if I'm at the theater, I'm definitely involved in just that. I think the problem is I just have too many things that I'm involved in. Maybe if I cut it down, it would be a little less stressful. And I've talked about it a lot. And there isn't anything that I'm willing to give up yet. So I guess I'll just continue this way until I can come to some terms of giving up some things. But anyway, we only have a few more minutes. And I want to – there were a couple quotes I was going to do, but I'm only going to do this one. And I think it's a great one to end the show on. It's an anonymous quote. I don't know where it came from. I found it on Pinterest. But I think it's very smart, and I wanted to know what your thoughts are because I think it kind of goes with this show topic. And the quote is, learn to love who you are even as newer versions of you emerge. I'm going to say that again. I really like it. Learn to love who you are even as newer versions of you emerge. And although, you know, we're talking about survivors of brain injury and how their lives have changed and how their new lives are emerging for them. This is a quote that can apply to anyone because all of our lives are changing all the time, and we're always emerging as new versions of ourselves. It's almost like a I'm not going to say that because it sounds awful. Well, I am. Okay, like a snake, skin, you know, sheds its skin all the time, and there's a new version of that snake, you know. So, but I hate to say we're snakes. So that's kind of a weird thing. Maybe a chameleon camouflage. You just change, constantly changing. So, yeah. So learn to love who you are, even as newer versions of you emerge. Megan, why don't you go first on that one? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's a hard thing to do because often we could be so stuck on wanting to stick to the version of ourselves that we had before our brain injury. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like you're desperately trying to get back to that person. But, you know, sometimes you just have to look forward and appreciate the person that you are now.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I'm going to make these a little short because I don't want to run over our time. So, Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with Megan. And I definitely would have to say that we definitely have to be blessed who we are, where we've come from, and where we are definitely going to go. We know we're going to grow and become a better person. We've grown so far from where we've become and mm-hmm. where we started from our brain injury. And we definitely need to thank the good Lord above on where we are today. I'm blessed. I know that. It's taken a lot of energy to get where I am today. And so that's where I am as far as I am today.
Okay, thank you. And Gail, go ahead with that. Learn to love who you are, even as newer versions of you emerge.
I say let's embrace it. And mm-hmm. because what if we do the other, what's the option? To not do that? And
yeah,
to not,
exactly.
You know, so enjoy the journey.
I know. Otherwise, you're stuck.
Right.
You know, So, I mean, I totally agree with you. Embrace it. And I think that's what happened with David and I with this, too, is, yeah, our lives have changed. You know, they're definitely different. But so we're on a different path, another fork in the road. We're on a different path. We're on a new, there's a new version of David here that I'm living with. And, I always say, would I like the old version to come back? Yeah, but I also like this version, so I would need both of them. And as David says, hey, the old guy left, so good riddance to him. You know, he's okay with the way he is now, and that's really a good, comforting thing. Would he like some of his things back? Probably. You know, that's the thing, especially a smile, as we talked about earlier. But, you know, you have your path, and whatever it is, the best thing is to enjoy it. Enjoy that version of you and be grateful. So I think on that note, I am going to have to do my housekeeping duties here, and I want to thank Megan Beaudry, Barbara Wilson, and Gail Wakin for joining me today. This was such a fun show with all three of you. And I really, thank you for offering so much of your knowledge about brain injury and your lives with brain injury. You can also check out, my guests on Google, or go to my website, as I said, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, and pop their names in there, and you'll find out more. I know Gail was talking about QEEG, and we talked about that on our last show, and I'm hoping that you can go back there if you're curious about that and get some more information, because it's an interesting topic there. On my blog, there's a category for brain injury resources. There's a category for guest bloggers, for itty-bitty giant steps. There's also you can read more about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, on another website I have, DonnaFigurski.com. So you can learn more about David's and my journey. Readers have told me the book will make you laugh, cry, and gasp. And when you gasp, let me know. Email me and tell me when you gasp, because that would be interesting to me. But there are a few gasping places in that book. So anyhow, check it out at DonnaFigurski.com, and don't forget to go check out the cast of characters page. That's fun. Let's see. As I always say, if you liked my show, tell 10 of your friends. If you hated it, well, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me, too. So as the clock is ticking up to 6:50, we have to say goodbye, folks. Please stay tuned to the next show with Matt Duffin, and it starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And I will see you on March 20th with Casey Chafee, who I don't have a book in front of me right now, is the author of 30 Days. Goodness sakes, I don't have it with me, but you'll get it. It'll be up advertised on Brain Injury Radio. 30 Days. It's about chronic pain and illness, and that's in the title, and I will know that better next time I talk to you. But Casey Chafee, Chafee, if you're interested. You can look her up on Facebook, too. So, please stay tuned, and don't forget to come back in 2 weeks to hear us again. So tonight I want to say thank you to Megan Beaudry, Gail Wakin, and Barbara Wilson. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks for having us.
Okie dokie. All right. See you all. Have a good week. Have a good life.